That's okay.
Okay, we are running about 10 minutes behind, which is not bad for an all-day thing like this. So we won't shortchange Duane. We'll extend it for 10 minutes on the end. And for those who may not have discovered it, there are drinks and cookies out in the foyer for you if you would like to get those. And we need to remind you that after we're done with this session, we're going to have a meeting for the Ex-Mormon Foundation, and everyone is invited whether you're a member or not. We would really like to encourage more membership because it's our dues, which are really very nominal. They're $20 a year, but they are what help fund, you know, some of our advertising, things like this that we do during the year building up to the conference. And we really would like to discuss some ideas that I know that Liz has put together. He's just been a wonderful president this year. And so we invite you to come and stick with us for another half hour or so while we have our meeting and maybe discuss some of these ideas. And we'd love to get your ideas, too, about some of the things you'd like to see the foundation do. So without further ado, I'm going to turn the time over to Duane, who was here last year. We loved his presentation last year. I've had a lot of feedback from it, a lot of people who said they just really, really enjoyed it, and I'm really looking forward to his time today. So, yeah.
Okay, can everybody hear me okay? All right, in the back? Okay, can you hear me? All right. Okay, first of all, I'd like to thank the conference organizers for putting on this conference. I think it's been really great, and I've really enjoyed the talks and presentations that have come already today. I think they're very high caliber and very informative. So thanks, Sue, for that. obviously, I have a pretty tough job ahead of me. It's mid-afternoon, and I'm going to be talking about something called statistics. So, you know, this thing also serves as a rock if I find anybody nodding off. Okay, so first of all, we need to do a little background. Let me see, is this working? I'm pulling the trigger. There we go. So I want to... Well, I'm impressed. You know, my wife told me that I don't have a sense of humor. And I didn't think anybody would laugh. But this is not a joke. Okay. It's a joke. This is going to be fun, I hope. So statistics does have a kind of a dry flavor to it. And hopefully it won't get too dry here today. But I do want to talk about some things that are fairly serious level intellectually. So the title of my presentation is Lies, Damn Lies, and LDS Statistics. And this is a play on a phrase that was uttered by this gentleman here. He left out the LDS part. And I should make clear that this doesn't really apply to just LDS. It really is, hopefully the things that you hear today will help you with statistics abuse outside of just the LDS arena, including abuses of statistics by corporations and governments. And statistics are really easy to abuse, partly because a lot of statistics is based on those funny-looking formulas. And when you show people those formulas, they just kind of glaze over because who can understand that? And you pretty much have to say, okay, well, I'm just going to trust the experts. I'll either believe it or I won't believe it. Or it sounds really impressive, so it must be true. But really, when you roll past a lot of the big talk, a lot of the abuses that happen in statistics are pretty easy to identify. You just have to have the courage not to be intimidated by it and just kind of peel back some of the layers. So I'm going to look at three case studies. Number one is, you know, that you find among the LDS claims out there that Utah produces more scientists per capita than any other state in the union. And so we'll look at that. And we're also going to look at some statistics relating to LDS church membership. You hear a lot of people saying the Mormon church is the fastest growing church. There was an article on the in a major weekly magazine, or I think it was Weekly Magazine, a while back that projected over 100 million Mormons in the not too distant future. And we'll be looking at some of those claims. And then there's just a recent claim that came out by Merrill, and he claims that Mormons have extra protection, presumably divine protection. They live longer than non-Mormons in Utah who adhere to the same basic dietary rules. So we'll have a look at that too. So first of all, let's have a little background on how you do some things in statistics. First of all, you might pick a population, and let's imagine in this case the population might be the state of Utah. And after you pick that population, you take a sample from that population. So you might go out and randomly collect about 1,000 people. You might put them, have them be part of your experiment. You calculate a property of that sample. So you might calculate the average age or the average weight, the life expectancy of that sample. And then you work back. You say, okay, this sample, which I drew from my population, has this characteristic. Therefore, the characteristic of the state as a whole has that same property. Wooten's study says is that these scientists were born in the state. After they are born in the state, they could move away. They didn't have to be educated there. They didn't have to work there. All they had to do is be born there. So in this case, who would be doing the work of production? So, you know, this is a really simple example where you see what I consider to be a really gross abuse of statistics, where you take a very narrow definition. Oh, this guy was born in the state of Utah, therefore Utah produced this scientist. That's what I would consider to be an example of a really blatant abuse of statistics. Now, what does it mean to be in relationship to population? Well, that's where we normalize things. So, for example, you'd expect a small state to produce fewer scientists than a large state in total numbers. But somehow you want to normalize that. You want to divide by the population so you know how many scientists there are produced per 1,000 population. Well, Wooten pulls a really nifty trick. He normalizes to the population from 40 years ago. And you don't even have to know too much about mathematics to see that if you had a really fast-growing state like Utah, you'd be normalizing to a very small population in reference to a state that's not growing quite so fast. So this is kind of a hidden trick that was going on here. It's not really obvious. Of course, the people that are throwing out these claims about Mormonism and science, they don't bother to let you know. You have to hunt and poke around before you find this out. Okay, so now the next question we might ask is, what is a scientist? Okay, there's all these, we're catching on here. We're getting suspicious. We're saying, okay, now we better have these terms defined. Is it somebody that's educated in the sciences? Somebody who uses the scientific method? A person who does pure scientific research? Or a person who does applied engineering? Would you include all of those in your definition? According to Wooten, it's... But, well, yeah, he also picked only white people. So if you're a black guy, you weren't included in Wooten's study.
How did you justify that?
Well, you know, in fairness to Wooten, I think the justification for that would be the fact that the Utah is primarily white. Okay. That's a different subject. Now, there's also a problem with self-reporting, and this was mentioned, kind of brought up in the previous talk. Different kinds of people will reply differently in sampling. Some people are really energetic about a particular subject, and boy, if they hear you're doing a survey on that, they want to be in on it. Other people are ambivalent. So, you know, if a Mormon scientist gets Wooten's survey in the mail, he's going to go, wow, you know, Brother Wooten's back again. We got to help out Brother Wooten and get this in right away. But if you don't fall into the typical LDS demographic, you know, it's chuck it over your shoulder. I don't have time for this. So this is just simply, you hate to use the L word, but that's what it is. In relationship to population, again, the hidden information there is when using a questionable normalization technique. Spawning scientists, producing babies who grow into scientists, and scientists, white people that are listed in this reference book that Wooten used. So when you kind of pull back the layers of the onion here, you find out, well, you started out with a really impressive claim, but, you know, when you're done, it looks a little bit naked. So let's look at how the hyperbole gets grown here. So you start out with Utah produces more scientists than any other state. Utah's statistics are due to the LDS Church. That's always true when it's good. It's never true when it's bad. No other church produces scientists as much as the LDS Church does. And the overabundance of LDS scientists shows the LDS Church is true. So this is how the line of reasoning goes. And you can see at every step along the way there, you can see that, you know, people are being dishonest with the statistics involved. So I'm not just making this up. Here's a guy named Mark W. Cannon. I don't even know who he is. You know, I've lost interest in the LDS Church, and I don't know who all the big shots are, but presumably this is one of them. Maybe some of you guys know him. But this is what he said, and I'm breaking it down, but these are his words. So people only become scientists by proving their intellect, their rational pursuit of truth based on demonstrable evidence and their skepticism. So the remarkable record of overabundance of objective scientists in Utah says points towards the LDS Church having some validity. So, but then this is the real jump here. So he all of a sudden now we go from comparing Utah to other states to comparing Mormonism with other religions. And this is a classic abuse of statistics, because nothing that Wooten did compared Utah to any other religions. And there aren't any other states out there that are as uniformly members of one religion as Utah is. Yeah, question in the back? What? Wooten wrote a series of papers. They're actually published in a peer-review journals. And I can get you the reference afterwards if you want.
So who peer-reviews that? How did that get through a peer review?
you hope that peer-review journals screen out Claptrap most of the time, but Claptrap can get through. So, you know, this called to mind, I think there's an article of faith, if I believe, that has the phrase, "We believe in being honest." Now, there's just too many breaches of ethics and honesty in this whole shenanigans about Utah and Mormon scientists to qualify under this category. So, this is a common trick I'd like to emphasize. He takes a narrow statistical study, and then with a wink-wink, he extends it way beyond any valid conclusions. Okay? So again, Wooten compared Utah against other states, not other religions and philosophies, and Cannon just sneaks that in. My guess is he's some sort of a politician or a lawyer. I hope there aren't any of those guys here. Yeah. So, you know, intellectual honesty or dishonesty is characterized, among other things, by special use of arguments that are rejected under other circumstances. So here, for example, is a study that I pulled out of Nature. And you notice what they did was they looked at greater scientists, and greater scientists were defined as scientists of national recognition. And this shows their belief in a personal God and how that belief has fallen off over the last few years, how their personal disbelief has grown, and, you know, agnosticism stayed about the same. Now, how would Cannon react to these statistics? Would he be willing to conclude, based on these statistics, that, you know, that we should be atheists? And yet, that is exactly the kind of argument that he's using with Wooten's study in terms of trying to convince people that Mormonism has some validity. So that's why I say this is an example of what I would call intellectual dishonesty, because he's taking an argument that he would be happy to use in one circumstance, but he's not willing to use the same argument in a separate circumstance. So Wooten and Cannon both equate Utah with Mormon statistics. And you have to ask if they'd be willing to do that all the time, okay? Because here's the statistic that shows that Utah has the highest rate of bankruptcy in the nation. And it's not too hard to take a wild guess at why that is, because a lot more people are likely to declare bankruptcy when they're paying a large part of their income to the local corporation. So again, here's an example where intellectual dishonesty is at play, because they're saying, you know, if Utah produces more scientists per capita than any other state, that's got to be because Utah's statistics are driven by the Mormon Church and so forth and so forth. And yet that conclusion would not be allowed in by them in this condition or in this situation. So you have to ask yourself, does Utah equal Mormon all the time? Here's a statistic on antidepressants and the fact that Utah has one of the highest or the highest rate of use of antidepressants. Is that because of the Mormon Church? And if not, why use that argument in one case and reject it in another? I got to tell you a story here. I come from a very large and extended Mormon family. I have well over 100 cousins. My family is all very staunchly Mormon on both sides of my family. And during this trip to Utah, I took the time to go visit a few of them and try and make amends, because I'm not in the best graces with my members of my family. And I went to visit an uncle a couple days ago, and he right off the bat, he told me, he said that there was no way I could win an argument with him. And I said, Jimmy, I don't want to argue right now. I'm in a hurry to get back to Salt Lake. Let's just talk about the good old days. So we did that for a little while. And then as I was walking out to my car and I got into my car, he came running out and he said, wait, he said, I got to tell you about this nutritional supplement. And he says, hang on a second, I'll run back in, I'll get you a free sample. So he brought out the free sample for me, and he had a pile of literature. And what amazed me about this literature was right on the front of the literature was a diagram about how you make money here. So you get started, and then you get two of your friends to get started, and then they get two of their friends to get started. And it was actually diagrammed out like a pyramid. And I thought to myself, wow, this is amazing. You know, I got the missionary lesson and I got invited to join a multi-level marketing program all at the same time. So, again, we ask ourselves, do these statistics of Utah reflect on the Mormon Church? And if the Mormon apologists are not willing to allow these statistics to reflect on the Mormon Church, then you have to say, well, why would you then assert the idea that the statistics about Mormonism or Mormon scientists or scientists from Utah would reflect on the Mormon Church? So the most common way to lie with statistics, you use them selectively. You keep certain things hidden. So those darn anti-Mormons. But you know, one of the problems with LDS statistics is that it's not, or LDS apologetics is it's not consistent. And later on, we'll see how this right here really ends up just digging another hole. So if you want to read my analysis on Utah scientists, you can find it at this website. I'm just going to hit a few of the highlights here. I went to a database that's kept by the a national organization of scientists, the National Science Foundation, and they actually record in that database the states where people are born that have different degrees in science. And this is what they showed. In the field, for example, of computer and informational sciences, Utah ranks number 47 in terms of normalized population of where those people were born. Now, Footen was right. These should all be one or pretty close to one. And you see that in all of these cases, the best they do is in other engineering. But if you look at, for example, physics and astronomy, Utah ranks 26. Earth sciences, 35. So you can see that Wooten's study, however it was done, and it may not be clear where exactly the bias comes in. It's certainly not in agreement at all with the data in the National Science Foundation's database. Well, remember what I said about taking lots of different samples. So you don't want to just look at one metric. If you want to really understand what's going on and you want to see the whole picture, you want to take a lot of pictures. So here's an example of this metric, but in terms of degrees, okay, just science degrees that are given. And it's broken down by associate's degrees, bachelor's up through doctor's degrees. And it shows the number of states with equal or higher ranking than Utah. So according to the data in the National Science Foundation's database, it's not just a matter of where you were born. And if you just look at degrees granted, they're not anywhere near the top either. Now, you know, you got to be fair here because all of these numbers are higher than 25. So they're doing better than average. But they're not doing number one. And that's one thing I commented in my review on Wooten's study is, you know, it's not good enough that you couldn't just be pretty good. You have to be better than everybody, and doggone it, if you're not, we're going to lie about it. Here's another example. These are doctorate degrees in science and engineering in 1999. Just look at this. You know, the District of Columbia, their rate was 0.528. Utah's rate was about one-fourth of that. And again, they're not doing badly, but they're not doing anywhere near what the hyperbole said. Okay, and this is, again, similar situation. I won't spend too much time on this. Okay, so let's move on to the next case study. You know, how many Mormons are there? Does anybody know? And is the Mormon church the fastest growing church in the world? And is there really going to be a quarter of a million Mormons in 2080? So let's look at this real quickly, a little quick summary on statistics. If you take statistical data and you plot it, you can then fit a line to it. And you can then take that line and you can extrapolate. So these studies that try and predict how many Mormons there will be out there in 2080, those studies are based on this kind of a technique. Now, there's a couple of things that you have to learn how to do. You have to know what kind of a curve to use. Sometimes you can understand just by looking at the physics or the mathematics of the situation that, hey, I should use a linear curve. Other times you need to use a polynomial. You might need to use an exponential. I think some of you may have heard of that term, exponential. So if you use an exponential curve, there's a couple things to know. First of all, it gives the largest future estimates. It assumes there are no impediments to growth. So right off the bat, you know that that's probably not the right curve to try and fit to growth data for the Mormon Church. Usually with populations, you can use an exponential curve when the populations are small, but almost always there's something that comes along and limits the population. And in the case of the Mormon Church, it could just be the word getting out about, hey, what do they teach, you know? Another equation is called the logistics equation, and it has that. It has early near exponential growth when it first starts off, but then it assumes there are limiting factors. So you can think of exponential growth as kind of what happens if the bucket had a hole in it. And in the case of the Mormon Church, it could be something as simple as the Internet. So you have to take a guess as to which data to use. And this shows an example that the red dots here show the reported membership. This is the data this is the membership that's reported by the church over a period of years. Now, if you fit this data to a logistic curve, you get this, and if you fit it to an exponential curve, you get that. And this is how that 265 million member estimate came. It came from just fitting it to an exponential curve, and that's just flat wrong. And if you fit it to a better curve, the logistics curve, you actually get quite a bit lower estimates. Oops, could you go back there for me? Oops, one more. Okay, there you go. Now, this shows the LDS, again, the red dots are the reported membership data. And this shows that you have to even with one type of curve, you can get all sorts of answers. Here I fit this data to all the data through all the membership data through 2004, and I got this curve. But if I fit it to only the data through 2003, I got this curve. And if I only fit to the data through 2002, I got this curve. So what this should tell you right off the bat when you look at this is you should go, wow, you know, the future is just not predictable. It's not predictable at all. But there is one thing you do see here, and that's there is a trend. And that trend shows that the carrying capacity or the carrying membership of the church is falling off as you add more and more years to this analysis. And that speaks to a very definite slowdown. Back in I think it was 1999, I wrote a paper on this. I put it out on the internet, and I made predictions about the church's membership. These are the membership figures that I predicted. These are the actual membership figures that were reported, and this shows their deficit. So you can see they're quite a bit behind what I predicted at that time. And that analysis that I did predicted an ultimate capacity, membership capacity for the church of about 35 million. Of course, all of these estimates go out the window if the data is wrong. And the problem with that is that where do we get the data? We get it from the LDS Church. So according to Merrill, 70% of Utah is a member of the church, 70% of the people. According to the church, it's even higher. Now, USA Today did an independent survey where they called people and they said, what church do you belong to? And only 57% of the people in Utah would admit to being members of the church. So you can see right off the bat, there's a real discrepancy. There's a lot more people that are being claimed than are willing to admit it. And the difference in Utah is almost a million people. Well, you know, again, you hate to use the L word, but sometimes you just can't avoid it. In 1998, the church reported a membership of just a little over 10 million people. And you can do this. You just go on the LDS Church's website and you look it up in the Ensign. In 1999, they claimed 10,700,000. So that's an increase of 398,000. People that they claimed year over year. But they forgot to, you know, when you're an accountant, you add down this way and then you add across that way. They didn't do that because they claimed this increase, but they only claimed that many baptisms. So they claimed that the increase in the church was 9,000 people more than the number of baptisms they claimed. And that does not include people that die. Well, a church with about 12 million people can expect roughly 40 to 50,000 deaths a year. And so that does, and that also doesn't include people that walk away or people such as myself that write them a nasty letter and say take me off your rolls.
Have you resigned?
Yeah, I have.
You had resigned last year, so that's new.
Yeah, I did 3 months ago.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
So it's pretty obvious here that somebody's playing fast and loose with the membership records. And because of that, it's very difficult to make any kind of predictions about future membership because there may only be 10 million Mormons now. It may be only 5 million. Who knows?
What about children and
women? I have no idea. Go.
Just on the point of accuracy of church records, I some time ago asked for all of the historical information on my donations, my tithe donation.
Uh-huh.
And it showed that I had been to a tithe settlement when I was 3.
Congratulations. Yeah.
The age of accountability.
Right. So, who's Mormon anyway? I pulled this off the website where USA Today has their statistics. And the claims by the LDS Church and Merrill are roughly equivalent to all of the Mormons in this survey, plus all of the Roman Catholics, plus all the Baptists, plus all the Methodists, plus all the Lutherans, all the Presbyterians, all the Anglicans, and the Muslims. So they are claiming the numerical equivalent of all of these groups of people that responded to the USA Today survey. Well, let me make sure you can appreciate the fact that it's not just the Mormons that cook the books when it comes to religious activity. I won't read this all the way through. You can if you want, but the upshot is that some researchers did a telephone poll and they asked a bunch of Catholics in a particular area how many of them went to church. And then they actually went and counted how many people were at church. They counted cars in the parking lot. They counted noses as they went through the front door. And it was about half. So half the people that were saying they were going to church really weren't. And that's a repeatable result. You can repeat that result, and it has been repeated. So people in surveys, people tend to over-report the level of their religious activity, except, I suppose, with this group here. I go to church every week. Not really.
Yeah, church to the NFL.
No, my church is, like I told my daughter, I took her hiking in the woods, and I said, Caroline, this is my temple. It's the temple of the wood. So, in summary, is the Mormon church the fastest growing church in the world? Well, no, it's not. Even if you use their statistics and the statistics of other religions, there's lots of them out there that are growing faster by any measure. Are they growing anywhere near as fast as the church claims? No. And are there going to be 265 million of them 80 years from now? No. And I'll be willing to bet you on that. Of course, I won't be alive then, but it doesn't matter. Not even close. So again, we believe in being honest. And I think this really comes back to this whole idea of, your claims have to be more than just assertions. You can't just say we believe in being honest and then put out this kind of crap. You can't say we believe in being honest and then lie. And that's what this is. And
The NPR thing that I told you guys about yesterday, we over and over and over again told the reporter that was there that it was a lie that the church was the fastest growing church, and we explained to her why. But in the lead-in to her report, her lead-in reporter quoted the same statement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it so frustrating?
Yeah. Okay, this is something else that a smart guy said. I don't know how smart he was, but he had some pretty good philosophy. So anyway, moving on. Ray Merrill has just recently reported, again, this is interestingly enough, in a peer-reviewed journal, that non-Mormons in Utah who don't smoke live shorter lives than Mormons in Utah who don't smoke. And I think you'll find the conclusion to this study really interesting. So this is the data from Merrill's study. And look at it closely. You'll see the life expectancy for non-smoking males, Utah LDS, and Utah non-LDS. And again, these are all non-smoking. So he corrected for that. He's actually pretty thorough in his work. I commend Merrill for what he's done here. Males and females. But you can see that the non-LDS live about 5 to 4 years shorter lives than the LDS. And you can't explain this by saying, well, Mormons don't smoke.
I'm sorry, I don't understand. What is the
difference? Oh, no. Okay, thank you for asking that. What this says is that a man who's 20 years old can expect to live 59 years longer if he's LDS, but only 54 years longer if he's non-LDS. Okay? Now, this looks like a pretty open and shut case, you know. So the difference in life expectancy is pretty clear. Merrill did a really good job of controlling for things. And it looks, like I said, like a pretty open and shut case. Let's take a closer look. Now, keep an eye on these numbers right here. If you take company called Future Financial, they did actuaries for non-smokers in North America. And these are the numbers they came up with. And you say, wow, you know, those don't look too different. This column looks pretty much like that column. And you remember that this is for North America. Now, in North America, there's not very many Mormons in North America. They're actually a pretty small percentage. So most of the people here are non-Mormons. They just don't live at all in Utah. Hayton actuaries are pretty much in agreement, aren't they? You see a trend going on here? The Canada Life actuaries, pretty much the same thing. Really close. So now when you look at this, you go, wow, these are all the same. That's the oddball. Why are these people living such short lives? What was that? I didn't
hear. We have to live around the Mormons.
Well, you're laughing right now. See, I did the same thing for the women, and the trend is exactly the same way for females, males and females. You see a very consistent trend here. Now, let me just play a game with you. Now that you've seen something here, if you were to look at this and ask me, what kind of questions would you ask about this? If you saw a population where the red bars, are those blue or green? Whatever. If you saw this population of red and green bars, and you saw that the red bars are all higher than the green bars, what kind of question would you ask? Why are the red bars so high? Wrong question. Now I'm going to show you the rest of the picture. Now what kind of question do you ask?
Why are those green bars?
It showed up blue on my monitor. Okay. So do you see how the question that you ask changes when you see more of the data? And what Merrill didn't do is Merrill did not look at the life expectancy of non-Mormons living outside of Utah. And that was where his mistake was. So what's the real question? Non-smoking Mormons from Utah have almost exactly the same life expectancy as non-smokers in North America in general. So it's not a case of the Mormons living somehow longer. It's the non-smoking non-Mormons from Utah have abnormally low life expectancy.
That sucks!
So, you know, when I looked at this, I thought to myself, by golly gee whiz, you know, who would have guessed? But it actually, I think, is very interesting. Blood atonement's the reason. I don't know. I don't know what the reason is. So again, this is the real question that needs to be asked here. And again, I didn't develop any of this data. Okay, the actuaries from the life insurance companies are out on the web. You can get to those. Of course, Merrill's data. He was fully responsible for that. I'm simply showing that, you know, you can look at something. Usually, you can look at things more than one way. In this particular case, if you look at all of the data, the conclusion that you draw is very different, and it's not very flattering to the LDS Church. Which is probably why that conclusion wasn't in Merrill's paper. So Merrill went on to make a couple of other claims. He said, Mormons are more religiously active than non-Mormons. They have a better physical health and healthier lifestyles, better support structures, and then he made the general claim that religious people live longer lives. So let's have a look at some of those. First question we might ask is, are Mormons really all that active? I was an elders quorum president during an earlier period of my life, and during that time, the activity rate was around 33%, and I assume that that's not unusual. Is that about what other people here have seen? Yeah. Well, according to Merrill, 71% of LDS Mormons go to church every week. Okay. The Encyclopedia of Mormonism, though, they say that attendance in sacrament meetings in the United States averages between 40% and 50%. Now, you know, here again, some red flags should go up. As 71% of Mormons attend church every week, would I have counted when I was dropping my daughter off at seminary? You know, you need to ask yourself these questions. What does it mean to go to church every week? Does that mean you drive by? Does it mean you go in? What does that mean? Does it mean you drive through the parking lot as you're dropping kids off for seminary?
Well, in sacrament meeting attendance, you count everybody that's there, visitors from out of town, right.
Right. Well, you know, I used to joke about this. I actually decided that the Mormon Church wasn't true about 15 years ago, but my wife reminded me that I had made covenants in the temple to stick by her, and I said, well, yeah, but you agreed to let me be the head of the house. And she said, well, that doesn't count. So I actually attended church for a better part of 12 years with my wife. And I said, well, I have to go to church, but I don't have to listen. So I took books to church and I read them. I read No Man Knows My History during sacrament meeting. After sacrament meeting, I'd sit in the foyer outside and I would read my book, and people would come up and say, what you reading? I said, I'm reading No Man Knows My History, or Compton's book on Joseph Smith's wives, or something like that. But I got counted. Okay, I was part of the 71% here. I don't know how many other people were in my situation. I don't know. I didn't really see any other people reading books. Bateman has just come out recently, not too long ago, and admitted that, you know, hey, maybe things aren't quite as good as the rosy picture the church paints. Mormon sociologist Armin Moss has estimated that only about 50% to 75% of Mormons or converts leave within a year or so. So it's a real question as to how many Mormons are really that active. So Merrill's claim that Mormons in Utah are living longer because they're more active is kind of suspect. There's not really any good data to back that up. And as we just saw, we don't need to back that up because that's not really the best question. Yeah, question.
I'm sorry, confused again. It says 75% for other areas. That would imply that there is more retention in other areas than in Utah. Is that a typo? Because I have always heard that it's less than other areas.
Yeah. And my point here isn't that these are correct. I don't know if they're correct or not.
Is that figure saying that in other places of the world, 75% stay after a year, 75% leave after a year? Because it looks like
she's pointing out that you might have
Right. Oh yeah, I may have turned that around. I don't think I did, but I might have. So what's the real activity rate? You know, the thing to focus on here is first of all, there's a lot of people throwing out a lot of different numbers. Did I just turn that off? No, I guess. But the thing to focus on here is it would be really easy to say what the activity rate is, but they're not telling. And so you have to ask yourself, why isn't that reported by the church? Why don't they report on activity rates? If it's so important in the propaganda machine to say what the activity rate is, why don't they report that activity rate? And I'll let you draw your own conclusions there. I wonder why. Okay, do Mormons really have a better lifestyle? Well, again, I don't know. I have a lot of Mormon relatives in the area. They all seem to have pretty darn good lifestyles. But, you know, my lifestyle is not that much different from theirs either. And you have to be careful about asking then what. Do they have a better lifestyle than the average person in Massachusetts, or do they have a better lifestyle than the average Catholic? And those are two different questions. And the tendency for the church is to draw comparisons to the mean. So you can say, well, I have a more active lifestyle than the average, but you know, the average may not be that good. You could think of the word of wisdom. I'm sure Mormons would bring up the word of wisdom. Talks about moderation. But also they lose the benefits of the moderate use of red wine, for example, and the heart benefits that come from that. They lose the benefits of moderate use of green tea. You have to ask if it's even practiced, because Utah has some not really impressive looking rates of obesity. I have to be careful here, but I won't say it. Yeah.
The benefit also of having a daily antioxidant at Starbucks.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, when you look at the word of wisdom, at least when I look at the word of wisdom, I say, yeah, clearly prohibition against alcohol, or not alcohol, but tobacco, has very definite health benefits. But if you take that out, there's not that much that's left. Does anybody really believe that Mormons only eat meat in the wintertime? I mean, you know, let's be real. I mean, they're going to be having their summertime barbecues as often as anybody else, right? Yeah.
I've seen the reports that the Seventh-day Adventists who strongly encourage vegetarianism are claiming that they have much better health stats, much lower heart disease rates, much longer lives, and so on. Have you ever looked into whether those stats hold up or not?
No, I haven't looked at those. Sorry. You know, the word of wisdom doesn't include anything that I can find about saying exercise. It says that if you eat right, you'll be able to run and not be weary, but it doesn't say you have to exercise in order to run and not be weary. I don't know, but yesterday my brother and I went and climbed Lone Peak, and my other brother, who's in the bishopric, didn't make it as far as me. You know, I can't imagine that the word of wisdom really provides, in and of itself, provides this extra benefit. It doesn't seem to make much sense. And as I just showed, and if you look at Merrill's analysis, you don't need to make an appeal to the word of wisdom at all, because non-smoking Mormons in Utah live the same life expectancy as non-smoking non-Mormons outside of Utah. Okay.
Question.
Yeah.
The person that didn't make it as far as you, are they local?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you live at what else?
I live at 600 feet. He's 10 years younger than me, too. So this is I think something that most of you have probably heard about too. Again, speaking to Merrill's claim about a healthier lifestyle, is a healthier lifestyle something that leads to this widespread use of antidepressants? And if Mormons are unwilling to apply the use of antidepressants to the Utah statistics of antidepressants to the LDS Church, then how about the rest of their arguments? How about better social support? I guess you have to ask for whom. You know, if you're a true believing Mormon and you're fully within the fold, you probably do have a pretty good social support. But how about the people that step outside that social support? What happens to them? This I thought was rather interesting. This paper is actually produced by LDS apologists. And interestingly enough, they were saying, look, the church is really good because people who stay active in the church have a really low suicide rate, but those who are less active in the church have a very high suicide rate. And you can turn the question right around. You can say, well, what are you guys doing to cause this high suicide rate among people that leave your religion? Oops. Utah suicide rate is actually the highest in the nation for young kids. And again, you come back to the LDS apologists will say, well, that's just those non-Mormons are driving up our stats. The only reason Utah has such a high suicide rate is because of all of the non-Mormons. But on the other hand, they're saying 70% of the state is Mormon, and 70% of those are active. So if that's true, then you have a suicide rate among non-Mormon youth in Utah that's four times the national average. And you have to say, why are youth, non-Mormon youth in Utah so likely to commit suicide? What is it about the culture in the state that causes that to happen? Yeah, question here.
Also, just wondering if you comment briefly about the difference here between correlation and causation.
That's really good. Yeah, because anytime you talk about statistics, two things are correlated if one goes up when the other goes up and one goes down when the other goes down. But that doesn't mean that they're caused. You can have things two things that are both caused by a third phenomena, for example. So just because things are correlated doesn't mean that they're caused. And usually in statistical studies, it's very difficult to prove causation. What you can show with statistics is a certain level of correlation. But in order to prove causation, or in other words, to show causation, you have to eliminate all the other possible factors. And that can be really, really difficult to do. So, again, the question. So let's look at this. Now, there's a lot of people out there. There are a lot of people out there that are claiming that religion is good for you. And I don't know if that's true or not. If you can find a lot of debate on both sides. And the best that I've been able to determine is if it is good for you, it's not very good for you because it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of difference. What I did here was I took the USA Today data and I plotted, this is the percent of non-believers right along here. These are people that self-identify as non-believers. You ask them, what church do you belong to? And they say, I don't belong to any church. I don't believe. And then this is life expectancy. Now, you can play a little game of statistics. It's not really a game. It's actually sound mathematics. It's called linear regression. And you can fit a line to this. And you can see that it's interesting that the life expectancy actually goes up as the percent of non-believers increases. And that's not what you'd expect from Merrill's assertion. According to Merrill, this line should slope the other direction. The other thing you notice here, though, is that it's not a real strong correlation. You can find states that have low percent of non-believers and a very high, a relatively high life expectancy, and then you can find states that have a large number of non-believers and a lower life expectancy. And one of the problems in making statements about religion and life expectancy is just as the gentleman here mentioned, causation and correlation. Think of it with religion. You know, there's so many factors that you have to eliminate. So, for example, if you were looking at Utah, you might say, well, I'm only going to compare people who make the same amount of money. But in Utah, if you're active Mormon, you have less disposable income because you're giving money to the church. There are all sorts of factors that have to be corrected for, and it becomes very difficult to correct for all of them. Another thing I'll point out, you know, when people ask me on occasion, they'll say, do you believe in God? And my first response is, well, which one are you talking about? And you can have the same situation here. Is there any reason to think that all religions would provide the same health benefits or anti-health benefits? Because certainly there are different lifestyles associated with each different kind of religion. Well, I did the same thing for countries. And again, I got a positive correlation between life expectancy and the percent of people who do not attend church. But again, you can see here it's a wide spread. So
which country is that 90% of up in the corner?
I think it's a Norwegian country.
What about the one on the bottom left?
I think this is Nigeria. You know, and so there you say, well, yeah, you can say, well, this correlates with how much money you have. Well, then you could say, well, maybe how much money you have correlates with religion. You know, and people that are less religious don't spend it all on whatever. Yeah.
You say that bottom dot with Nigeria?
I'm going from memory here. It might not be.
The recent Newsweek article indicated that the church is growing at 394% annually in Nigeria.
Yeah. Well, you know, who are the people who are most likely to buy a lottery ticket? You know, people who are desperate, people who are desperate and poor are more likely to buy lottery tickets, and you could think of religion as kind of a lottery ticket.
People who don't have access to the internet.
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, this raises the question, could religion be bad for your health? But certainly I think it speaks to Merrill's claim that religion in general is good for your health, because this is not what we'd expect to see if that was the case. Yeah. Okay, I'm almost done. This was a comment that I saw on the by somebody who is criticizing the studies about religion and health. And he's basically saying, okay, let's suppose that your studies showing a positive correlation between religion and health are good. Should we then assume that God is no more efficient in taking care of you than modern medicine? In fact, a lot less efficient, because the correlation's weak. If the God effect is less apparently than aspirin when it comes to a headache. Okay, and we already covered this. I thought this was rather interesting. An early study showed an association between reduced mortality and attendance with church. The author went back later and he found out that. You know, people that don't go to church a lot of times are too sick to go to church. And that's why they didn't have as long a lifetime. And so he corrected for that. And when he corrected for that, the correlation went away. So it just, again, points out the difficulty in making statements about causation from these kinds of correlations, because there are so many factors involved and they're very hard to correct for. Okay, so, you know, this is just me rattling, okay? Why is Utah dangerous for non-Mormons? I don't know, but it could be the stress of being a minority in a theocratic state, discrimination in housing. Did I lose my... Okay, I'll try and speak louder.
You also have a buddy I can talk to.
Talk there. Oh, okay. It could be discrimination in jobs. I think actually right now there's a couple of lawsuits going on in the Salt Lake area about people who claim they've been discriminated against in their jobs. Discrimination in education, all these things are possible. Specifically, I think in the case of young men and suicide rates, it could be unhealthy attitudes by the church towards sexuality. So, statistics without the lies. Always tell the truth. There's less to remember that way. This is an associate of mine. That's a pragmatic approach. Another one, if you're committed to finding the truth, you don't have to have lists of forbidden books. You don't have to have questions that you can't answer. This is actually a relative of mine who taught me that lesson at a very early age. Unfortunately, she's not willing to apply it to the Mormon Church. She is willing to apply it to the Catholic Church, though. So anyway, if you were like me, you were taught it then, and I hope that you can believe it now. Thank you.
Selection biases in that suicide study showing that people who were more active were less likely to commit suicide. One of the first things that happens with a person who becomes so depressed and likely to take their life is they start withdrawing from society. And the first thing they're going to do is they're going to stop being active.
Right, they're going to go inactive.
Right,
yeah.
And then, boom, incredible selection bias. It's like going to a Ford dealership and wondering why all the cars are Ford.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Thank you. That's an excellent point. Yeah, question back here.
A couple of comments. Even when we count the data correctly, we have to be careful. It's called the confirmation bias. You might have it on an R or 2 point in the LTS or an endpoint. Basically, it's a tendency, if you already know the answer before you start looking at the research, that you tend to minimize any effort or facts that will diminish or not support your conclusion. So it is a definite bias in the science.
Right. Yeah, I call that the belief diode. What you believe in goes in, what you don't believe in stays out. And it reinforces what you already think. Yep, excellent point. Yeah.
In your presentation, you talked about the idea that being religious doesn't necessarily mean being more healthy or living longer. And yet in Ken's presentation, I got the impression that, at least there was a chart that talked about someone who's active in religion kind of tends to make more healthy lifestyle and so forth, or at least greater longevity. This is, I guess, kind of a question for Ken. Is there evidence or support? Because I've heard that, too. That if you're religious, then you tend to be more healthy.
Time for questions is over. Remember at the front of that thing that I introduced by Gunter, who looked at all those studies, said that the results are mixed because frequently those with a bias for or in favor are not willing to admit that it isn't effective and vice versa. And so there may be confirmation bias or selective bias in those studies, and they may not be as accurate. He's just reporting the studies, and I just reported them.
Okay, questions here?
Where can I learn more about living on Prozac in Utah? I've heard it's just an urban legend, but then I've heard that it's actually proven. I mean, can you tell me where I can read about
it?
A lot of us have the link if you want to give it to me.
Yeah, and what I quoted was a newspaper article, but I assume stand up so people can see you. And afterwards, if anybody can help this lady out, okay? Oh, there you go. Yeah. Okay.
Did you see the article this last week in the Tribune with where Bateman was talking about the statistics within the church that they used to maintain the membership of the church? They used 110 years old as a life expectancy for they kept them on the records until they were 110.
Yeah.
As if all of us lived to be 110 years old.
Right. My dead uncle is on the rolls. Question?
I have another interesting comment to add about the youth death. I think that this mind for the Lord can affect the entire culture, and we can't stop so much crime, so much white collar crime, particularly here. But also on the matter of youth death, you've all seen these 911 posters. Well, my son died 10 years ago in that exact same way, and I haven't been able to find the correlation. So I'm suspecting that possibly this is an infected kind of like a virus that's attacked this culture, that people, even who are non-LDS, don't want to be found looking bad, don't want to get in trouble, and are willing to sacrifice a person's life for that.
Sunstone, there was an apologist that got up and said the reason that Utah Mormons take more antidepressant drugs is because Mormons don't drink.
Okay.
Oh, I feel a lot better.
I wonder which one's worse for you. Okay. Thank you very much for your cooperation.
Thank you.